that's loose to the human spirit.
We are fighting down the bottom with a bottom group of players.
That's an extremely naive statement.
I didn't know any of that.
The arm sock tube's far too big for me.
Holding the high line with Rabbi in red. Talking the rabbits and turning heads. With questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Hello, Colorado Rapids fans. This is Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. We are brought to you by Icarus FC and Roughneck Scarves. My name is Matt Pollard. It is Monday, the 5th of July, 2021. Narrative FC's dream has come true as one of England or Denmark will play in the final of the Euros. Messi's scoring in bangers for Argentina on free kicks. How does that make you feel, Cristiano? And I have seen the Rapids faithful IRL, and oh, was it glorious other than the final score of the game on Sunday. I'm joined now by a man who's hotboxing in the car in the driveway of the in-laws' place, Rabbi Mark Goodman.
Well, the in-laws are in my place, but yes, thank you, Matt. I think most of our listeners will assume that hotboxing is a standard Colorado phrase for getting into a car with your high school buddies and getting a massive contact high off of the one tiny joint that you've all rolled for the experience. I am doing no such thing. I'm just in a car. That's the only, and it's hot. Because my in-laws are in the podcast basement with all the scarves, and my wife doesn't let me podcast in the house because the only person louder than me is Matt Pollard. Matt is very loud, and that is one of the greatest things. I'm really glad that there's software that automatically levels the volume of our podcast, because guys, if you turn this up to like normal volume, it would break your headphones. We would damage your audio equipment.
Yes, Levelator is the app that we use that we put the audio through after I do some of the basic initial cleanup and stuff in post, folks. And then I put it through Levelator, and then we balance that out with the intro music and the outro music that we have. So hopefully it's a consistent audio for the most part, other than when Mark or I are saying Scottish salmon or referencing something about certainly Goal Bassett is that way. But I would say, Rabbi, is this the weirdest setup we've had in terms of a podcast? Like, we've done, Skype allows us to call phone numbers. So I think I've called a phone number when you were in California at one point. When I've been traveling for work, we've done it where I have been working off of hotel Wi-Fi, which has been inconsistent. And then obviously we have to talk about the hotel art that we have, old inside joke that we have. But you are in a car with the laptop on and then using a hotspot on your phone, and then your phone is plugged into the car battery in order to have enough phone battery to run the hotspot for the 45 minutes, maybe an hour-ish that we'll be talking. Is this the weirdest, like, least professional setup that we've had for a podcast in the history of the show?
Probably. I mean, it's funny because I've never done this podcast from a foreign country. Have I been to Israel in the time we've done this podcast? Maybe not. Maybe we missed that. But, next summer, we're already talking about next summer doing our trip to Israel instead of the in-laws having to come here. So that'll be interesting because the odds are, based on my in-laws' strange apartment and the strange time difference between the two, I may be randomly wandering the streets of Jerusalem at 8 o'clock in the morning doing the podcast with you, which would be super awesome, I think. But
worst case scenario, Mark, we'll have another loney come in for that, since you'll pun intended, be on international duty.
Yeah, that'd be fun. I mean, you know, it'd be a good opportunity. It'd be another good opportunity for me to write an article that I love writing, and everybody else goes, ugh, I don't want to read this, which is about my favorite second division team in Israel, who moved up to the first division this last week, or a couple weeks ago. So congratulations to Hapoel Jerusalem, who will be in the premiership of the Israeli Soccer League. Yay!
Excellent stuff. Mark, our main banter topic that we had for this evening was what occurred after the final whistle on Sunday. Before the fireworks. So before the fireworks, after the final whistle, in which the Colorado Rapids welcomed back Oh Captain, My Captain himself, Pablo Mascherini, to formally retire his number 25 jersey. It was a cathartic day, certainly for me, Mark, and I would hope all of the Burgundy Blue faithful, as we had the first full capacity Dick's Sporting Goods Park game that we had since the home opener of last year against Orlando. Just the seventh ever home game that Robin Fraser has managed at DSG with a full allowed capacity. An official announced attendance, folks, so tickets distributed, though it was pretty darn close with how many butts I saw in seats, albeit with some away Seattle fans helping out with that, of 17,104. The last time that a ticketed game, folks, was more than that would have been a game in March of 2018 against Sporting Kansas City. So a massive game, really, really great atmosphere for me, Mark. And for the most part, the crowd stuck around waiting for Pablo's retirement ceremony. They had a great video that hopefully the Rapids will be putting out on social of what they put up on the video board on the north side of the stadium. They got Ray Hudson, Mark, to do the main narration of that with highlight reels of him from the national team, from his time in Miami, some old photos of Pablo playing as a youngster, and then certainly a lot of video and photo highlights of him with MLS Cup wearing the Burgundy and Blue. Absolutely fantastic. And they also got a few video messages, well wishes from a few people, including Landon Donovan, who talked about their mutual time with the national team, Tim Howard, a few of his old teammates and everything. Just a fantastic set. And then also Kyle Beckerman, who talked about him not only as a teammate with the Rapids, but also going up as an enemy. And then Richard Fleming recounted all of the various statistics that Pablo still holds as club records, including fouls committed, yellow cards, red cards, and then also fouls sustained. So where another opponent fouls him, that's happened to Pablo more than it has to any other player for the Colorado Rapids. And Pablo seemed to be in a pretty good chummy mood, Mark, just kind of laughing it off, being really happy. So I think Pablo was super happy. We've mentioned, folks, on the an interview that I had with him back when he was still with the Houston Dynamo last calendar year, of asking of the final question that I asked him that we will be featuring in Memories from Toronto, which is in production, hopefully, folks, going to be happening or being released for you to enjoy sometime this calendar year. We've had some production issues that I won't go into detail that Mark has heard me complaining about far too many times. In any case, about just kind of him and the wounds that were there with really, you know, the Colorado Rapids breaking up with him, having a divorce with him and trading him as a player, ultimately him getting fired, and the fact that Pablo could be on the stage, seemed to be in a really, really happy, chummy mood, a festive mood with 4th of July, and then shaking hands with Porrick Smith, the man who fired him when he was general manager, and Pablo would have been the head coach. The fact that he could come here, I think, was the physical, that night and that moment and the speech that he had was the physical manifestation of he's more happy about what was achieved with the Rapids, and the wounds have healed despite the two things ending for him. And now, obviously, his main employment is as an enemy of the Colorado Rapids. But Pablo was super heartfelt, super emotional, didn't speak super long, maybe wasn't as philosophical, but, you know, was definitely got to the point of it, albeit it was a little bit generic from him. He was holding back tears at one point, and I think the club on a whole, Mark, did a very, very good job of putting on a display that ultimately was befitting of their former head coach, of their former captain, of the only man to, as captain, lift MLS Cup for the Colorado Rapids. And now they have a little number 25 kind of a statue display, folks, that is going to be put out, I'm not sure where on the stadium, but is going to be display outside of the stadium somewhere permanently. So maybe not the statue of Pablo that, Mark, you and I have openly stand for, but, you know, having the number 25 and then a plaque associated with that, pretty nice option. So I guess the next statue in order is probably going to have to be Cello's bicycle kick for me personally. But in any case, Mark, Pablo Mascheroni came home. Bygones are bygones. He is at a happy place relative to where he was with the Colorado Rapids, given the wounds that were inflicted on him by the club. And ultimately, it's happy memories more so than disappointment in how things ended, and other than the fact that he officially is picking up checks from an enemy, Pablo will be remembered doing nothing but good things and representing the shirt the way that he did. And I think what really summed up for me in his speech that he had, Mark, besides thanking all of the teammates that he had and people put up with him and put him in his position to succeed, was a quote that really stuck out and I think speaks to the ethos of who he was as a player and really the formation of, you know, the club's unofficial hashtag of keep fighting. Of he said, you know, during his time at Colorado, in which he spent over one third of his life now, he realized the symmetry between belief and sacrifice. And so belief and sacrifice were the pillars upon which the number 25 statue display will be put outside of Dick's Sporting Goods Park in Commerce City, Colorado. The pillars holding that up in the concrete of that display will be sacrifice and belief. Mark, your thoughts.
It's amazing that you were there. You know, I can only imagine what it was like, because the last time I was at a game that was like that was when Jamie Smith was inaugurated into the Circle of Honor. Ring of Honor? Ring of Fire? I never remember what they call that thing. I remember it was done, I think, mostly at halftime, and there were some bagpipes. And I think a lot of people, because this was already like, you know, kind of Rapids 3.0, a lot of people were like, who's this guy? You know, like he was just a little bit distant and whatever. And I also think Jamie Smith, as talented and as integral as he was to the Rapids, I think he was not of the same caliber per se as Pablo Mastroeni or Marcelo Balboa or Connor Casey. And I think to that end, I guess, you know, just to conclude the thought is it feels really nice that Pablo was the first number ever retired. It's really interesting because, you know, it's an American sports tradition to retire numbers. It's not a European thing. I don't know. If there are, I think most clubs in Europe have never retired a number. And if you told the fan bases, like, oh, you should retire a number, they'd be like, retire a what now? Like, they just don't conceive of the idea. And I like it. I think it's really nice. It's especially useful that, you know, his number is 25. It's a number that stands out, but it's not like one of the integral key numbers out there, like 9 or 10 or 6 or 8, where retiring it would be a problem. But, you know, you and I, Matt, both spoke with Pablo when he was a manager. We both found him to be an entertaining guy, a straightforward guy. And his coaching career was an extension of his personality as a player, where it was hard in the tackle, hardworking. You know, he really believed in defense. He really believed in winning games by grinding your opponent to dust. Both as a player and as a coach, I really appreciate that. You know, I don't know that I've ever moved on from the Pablo Mastroeni era, not in terms of like believing in other coaches, but in believing in the coaching philosophy of being a hard-nosed defensive team. I really enjoy that. I will forever be appreciative of Pablo Mastroeni.
Just a quick fact check here for you, Mark. Officially, it's the Gallery of Honor. The first two inductees were Marcelo Balboa and Paul Bravo, and the other four additions were Chris Henderson, John Spencer, Pablo in 2014, and then Connor Casey in 2017. So I'm assuming you might be remembering Connor Casey rather than Jamie Smith there, Rabbi.
Oh, let me correct it. I guess he wasn't inaugurated into the Ring of Honor. I guess he was given a, like, testimonial moment, but it was, maybe they just honored him without putting him in the ring, but, like, I remember it was Jamie Smith. I just remember also that, like, maybe they just said congratulations on a great career and didn't inaugurate him into anything.
Okay. Might have been a Legends night or maybe him formally retiring. So something similar to what they would have done with Tim Howard, where, you know, it was celebrating his final home game at Dick's Sporting Goods Park, even though, you know, Tim Howard's number was not retired and certainly he was not added to the Gallery of Honor. And I can think of a few other goalkeepers that should go in there for the Colorado Rapids prior to one Tim Howard. If we're talking about just his contribution, Buna time. Absolutely. But no, Mark, I've said this before, but it bears repeating. Pablo Mastroeni if you were to look at the culture and what the club represents and how they feel from a, how they feel about Colorado, how they feel as a community in and around the soccer community in the greater Denver metro area, and just the philosophy on who we are as a club, hardworking, we love a tackle, you know, will beat skill when skill isn't willing to, will be physical. If we were to take all of that, you know, put in, you know, sugar and spice and everything night and then chemical X and manifest that into a human being, that physical manifestation, if it's not Marcelo Balboa, it's Pablo Mascherani. So I think befitting that he gets his, he's the first number retired, that, you know, he officially, you know, he's made it clear in some of his immediate availability that there's no longer any, you know, ill will, you know, the wounds have been healed between him as, and the club, and that was evident, you know, and to have it be a big game against a big opponent, first game in a while, you know, with a full capacity crowd, over 17,000 people in attendance, to have it be then at that night with the year that we've had, with the last year and a half that we've had, not only as people in the Colorado Rapids community, but just as a society as well. I think perfectly timed, perfect community fitting, and well executed by the club, everyone involved, and certainly Pablo in being there as well. So, you know, that was fantastic for me. Hashtag Pablo25. Anything else that we want to say about this, Mark, or shall we get to the, shall we get to the actual 90 minutes?
Did you actually catch fireworks, or did you act, did you have to like cover some post-gamey things and miss the fireworks?
So, but all of the post-game stuff, actually, I don't know what it was, Mark. They had set up the stage and like put out the ropes for where people in the stands could then come down and actually sit onto the field for the ceremony and everything. So I don't know if somebody at the club said, hey, let's do media availability. And then if the players or staff want to come out and join that, you know, let's not have those two things going on simultaneously. But so we got Robin Fraser and Diego Rubio post-game, all still virtual, pretty typical for what it is right now, folks. And both of those things happened, and then they had Pablo, and then they had the fireworks and everything. Mark, you and I have lots of, not necessarily fun memories, but memories of, you know, us being in the bowels of Dick's Sporting Goods Park outside the locker room talking to Marlon Hairston. I want to say this was in 2016, and the fireworks started in the midst of our interview, and it started off with a really large bang, and Marlon was in the middle of answering a question, and like he jumped because he was surprised by the noise of it. So no, we got all the media stuff was done prior to even Pablo taking the stage or the intro video that they had, and they had that in the fireworks. So I was full on ducking out because I wanted to escape the I wanted to escape the traffic and everything. So I saw maybe 2 or 3 minutes of it from my car where I was set up, and that little spot in Commerce City around the stadium, folks, is a really good position to like see a bunch of other fireworks. I could see some out to the east and then some also south. I couldn't see any north from the press box in the stadium, but I did see them once I was walking out in my car. It's a great position for like, there were people lining up who I guess just parked in the parking lot, sat down in lawn chairs or like put down blankets with their families just to watch the fireworks and then go on and leave. So I'm like, okay, this is super crowded, especially given the crowd that was physically there for the game. I want to get out of here before, you know, 60th is an absolute mess, and then trying to get onto Central 70 now that that is still under construction, Mark, and it looks very different from what you would have remembered, you know, going to the airport or anything from Central downtown Denver. But that was it. I mean, the fireworks display was nice, folks, but I mean, I'm going to be a little bit of a 4th of July curmudgeon here, Mark, and say that, you know, you see one firework display, you've seen them all. None of them are particularly unique or memorable. Like, I saw them for 5 minutes. Like, okay, I can go. I'm done with my 4th of July and everything. Listeners, as we sent just a little over 24 hours ago at time recording on Sunday, the 4th of July, the Colorado Rapids hosted Seattle Sounders, and the final score was 1-0. The Rapids, Mark, came back out in their 4-3-3 formation. All three players who will be going to the Gold Cup for the U.S. national team from the Rapids did start in this game. So Jonathan Lewis was on the left opposite Michael Barrios. Andre Shinyashiki, interestingly enough, filled in the number 8 role next to Cole Bassett in the midfield. And then Kellen Acosta dropped back to the number 6. And then the traditional back line and William Yarbrough vis-a-vis the Seattle Sounders, who came out in their 3-5-2/5-3-2 with Rui Diaz up top. And Mark, this game got off to a very, very heated and you know, just a really frantic start, and the Colorado Rapids were very active. They pressed very, very well, especially in the first half. They turned the ball over, and then they were quick and very direct in terms of, let's get the ball forward, let's get the ball into space, let's swing a wide-out ball to Michael Barrios to move from the final third into the box towards the touchline, let's find Jonathan Lewis in space, let's find space, let's create havoc and try and disorganize the Seattle Sounders defense. And in the opening 20 minutes, folks, the Seattle Sounders bent a whole lot, but they did not break. The first really good opportunity that we had came in the 6th minute of play when Jimmy Madronda found Raul Ruiz Diaz for a, it was trying to be a header. It ended up going off of his shoulder, bouncing up over everybody's head, then onto the crossbar, and then out for a goal kick. That was a very good opportunity for Seattle, and really one of the few that they had in the first half before the goal. Kellen Acosta finds Michael Barrios from Jonathan Lewis for a header in the 8th minute. First really, really good opportunity that the Rapids had was in the 13th minute when Andre Shinyashiki made a run after Jonathan Lewis stayed to occupy, the other center back that they had, Yaimar Gomez Andrade. And so Shinyashiki makes a run, and then the cross comes in, and he tries to outside foot it. Not sure if he was going for the inside of the post or trying to find somebody, but nobody was there at the back post, and the ball rolled out for a goal kick. Potential PK opportunity. There was some controversy amongst Rapids Twitter as to whether or not this should have been given or whether or not the play should have gone to VAR. Kevin Stott had a very, very Kevin Stott game, Mark, not unlike Baldomero Toledo, as we talked about last week on the podcast. In any case, Jonathan Lewis wins the ball, gets forward on Gomez, and then is run into from behind. He goes down in the box in the 21st minute. Nothing given at all. And then Seattle goes back into the midfield and then wins the foul, ultimately resulting in a yellow card for Diego Rubio for dissent on the play. Very, very similar plays happened later on in this game for Kevin Stott. There was another PK shout with Jonathan Lewis going down, but ultimately nothing was given. Decent header opportunity from Diego Rubio in the 29th minute, but he wasn't able to get that on goal. A couple of other really good opportunities for the Rapids, Mark, before first blood is struck in the 44th minute from the Seattle Sounders. Alex Roldan, who's been absolutely fantastic for them this season, is battling with Sam Vines. Vines tries to play it to Shinyashiki to get out of the pressure. Bit of a miscommunication, maybe a poor first touch from Shinyashiki allows Alex Roldan to run onto it and then smash it past William Yarborough, who gets a piece of it but didn't want his head taken off, and ultimately the goal stood after there was a review to see whether or not there was a handball. Nothing given. Very, very clearly goes off of the leg of Alex Roldan on his first touch. So at halftime, it is 1-1, Mark, and the Colorado Rapids pick up where they left off. Kind of the theme of the night here, folks, was the Rapids winning the ball in midfield, dominating the midfield, getting the ball forward, getting it into good areas with good positional play and people in dangerous areas, but either in the passes for that or in the passes connecting. The final pass was missing to set up the shot, or ultimately the final shot didn't happen in a way that reflected poorly on the Rapids from a final XG standpoint. So lots of balls in really good areas, people in really good areas, not resulting in great shooting opportunities, and when those shots came, did not result in really good opportunities. First really good opportunity that the Colorado Rapids had in that, Mark, came in the 54th and then the 52nd minute. Cole Bassett gets the ball on a header in the air from Keegan Rosenberg, and he puts it off the mark, and he kind of falls over, not from jumping in the air, folks, but from kind of the, oh, I'm so mad at myself, I'm going to fall to the ground, and then he gets up and slams his hands down on the grass. That was a microcosm of Cole's game and really the run of play that he's been on. Finally, the Colorado Rapids break the dam that was the Seattle Sounders in the 58th minute. A long ball from Sam Vines goes through everybody in the box. Michael Barrios is able to collect it in the Manchester City zone in the box, and then he cuts inside and buries it inside the far post off of an opportunistic bounce off of Sissoko's or Yaimar Gomez's legs that also saw him get nutmegs, and then we were tied at 1-1 in the 58th minute, Mark. Several other really good opportunities. The best one for me was probably in the 69th minute, in which there was chaos in the box with Cleveland, the goalkeeper for Seattle, parrying the ball down off of the grass, and then it bumped into the air, and Barrios was in there. Shinyashiki and Cole Bassett were in the area both trying to go for the loose ball before a foul was called after Cleveland was able to gather it. You know, Colorado, dominated play in terms of possession and trying to create opportunities, but ultimately couldn't find anything and ended up being 1-1. Rabbi, what was your good thing from this past Sunday's 1-1 draw against the Rave Green?
I feel like most fans expected more and were disappointed in the results. And I think considering where we were last week in talking and previewing about this game, reminding everybody that Seattle was undefeated going into this game and looked very hard to beat, and really had taken apart most of the good teams in the league and without too much difficulty. Seattle plays very well on the road. I was very happy with a tie. I feel like I was the only person who was happy with a tie. That Colorado was also missing a key player in Jack Price, who's been so important with set pieces. And Colorado went toe-to-toe with Seattle. They really controlled the flow of the game. And I think, I guess, my best good thing here is that at no point did the Rapids defense kind of bend or break. The positioning wise, they never allowed the offense or excitement or transition to put them into a dangerous position. They were always defensively sound, and they never moved the offense around too much that made them, potentially exposed on the counter. Matt, what was your good thing?
Chance creation and really just the overall performance. And even they had, they weren't able to finish off any of the opportunities on set pieces, but they had some good looks and some good balls in. I was kind of curious to see, Mark, what the Rapids were going to do once we saw that Price was out with an undisclosed injury. I am curious, Mark, was that just him potentially being hung over because he partied too much after England won in the quarters? Is a satirical question that I will not be asking Robin Fraser to his face when we have media availability for tomorrow. But in any case, I was kind of curious, it was Cole Bassett taking the corners for the most part. Kellen Acosta did take one really decent direct free kick that the Rapids had that was just a little bit over the bar, but really a good chance. Nice shot that I had, Mark, that we'll be using for the podcast article on Last Word that has a really great angle on Acosta taking the shot with some pretty funny expressions from the Sounders players who are in the wall. I always find you'll appreciate this, Mark, the photojournalism that we see in sports photography, captures some really, really funny just moments in terms of facial expressions from players reacting to what's going on the field that I find very amusing. But, they had a couple really decent half chances. And I was kind of worried with Price not being there, given that he's been the main service provider from a set piece opportunity, that the corners were completely impotent. And while they didn't finish them, they got the balls into good areas. I think the theme of the night that I had from this game was the Rapids creating chances, getting the ball in good areas, putting in a good performance. And Seattle was simply, they were the rock to break the wave that was the Burgundy Wave on Sunday night. And just every single time the Rapids got into a good area, just the Sounders were just perfect and resolute in what they did defensively. Cleveland was fantastic. All the center backs, I thought, did a really good job from Seattle's standpoint in terms of breaking up play, in terms of being physical to the extent that Kevin Staat allowed them to be physical. And when they took yellow cards, it was a good, it was a good yellow card that it was, take the yellow card rather than let the Rapids get in transition in the way that Sissoko did, in the way that Yamar Gomez did as well. So I think the Rapids put together, for not having an absolute worldly of a goal from a finishing standpoint, for not having an elite striker who could finish off those opportunities in a really close game, I think Seattle matched the Rapids pound for pound in terms of what the Seattle had to do reacting to the Rapids. Came at them with everything that they could offensively, given the circumstances, and Seattle matched them defensively pound for pound. And so I guess the big thing, Mark, is, I'll agree with you. I think if the finishing was a little bit better, but the simple fact that the best team, the unquestioned folks, best team in Major League Soccer came in to Dick's Sporting Goods Park, played for a draw, and the Rapids took it to them for the better part of 90 minutes, to the point where they were the better team, and the stats would largely back that up, other than XG, where I would point out again, a lot of those chances didn't necessarily turn into shots. This was the best defensive performance for the Seattle Sounders all season long. Mark, the Seattle, I should point out, they haven't been shut out this season. And they've only, and only in a few games have they scored more than one goal. So given that you gave up the one really good opportunity, it was a broken play that could have easily been dealt with. You know, Robin Fraser talked about how Seattle does not need, they need four or five chances in order to score their goal to get a result, folks. And so the fact is, Raul Ruiz Diaz was held in check by the center packs. You know, I think other than that play and maybe two or three other plays, which you could easily forgive on the whole of the 90 minutes, the Rapids did a really good job defensively against the Seattle Sounders, and they're the first team that's really taken to them to where Seattle was on the back foot playing for a draw rather than coming in to win as the best team in Major League Soccer right now. Rabbi, bad things.
The bad thing, you've been talking a lot about the how even the matchup was regarding expected goals, so American Soccer Analysis's math on the expected goals was 1.11 expected goals for the Rapids, 1.16 expected goals for Seattle. That's good in the sense that, like, it was close, and considering both teams got one goal, and that was roughly what math says they probably should have produced anyways. The thing that's interesting, it's a number or a difference between two numbers that I've never really dug into. And to be honest, ASA's never really dug into it in the many think pieces they've done on the math that I've read from the work that they do. There's another statistic, which is an aggregate measure of all of the expected goals that should have happened based on the passing, the turnovers, the defense, all the other things that happen in the game, which is called offensive G+, or offensive goals added. And the Rapids had 1.93 offensive G+, and Seattle had 1.20. So just to kind of draw those two numbers together, Seattle's offensive G+ and their expected goals were very close to each other. The Rapids' offensive G+ and expected goals had a little bit of distance, which meant that the Rapids did a very good job of possessing the ball, moving the ball into the final third, and putting themselves in a dangerous scoring place. But then they didn't always take that shot, which I think is really interesting, right? There's a big discrepancy, about a 0.82 discrepancy between offensive G+ and XG. There are a lot of reasons for that number, but very simply, that's a pretty wide gap, Matt. And what I think it says from what I saw is that Colorado got into the final third effectively, more effectively than they normally do. They didn't always take the best shot available to them, and they sometimes were clumsy with the ball into that final pass, you know? Some of those opportunities, like you mentioned in your recap, were Kevin Stott not giving us a foul. There were two that I kind of, like, rolled my eyes at and thought, like, yo, we probably should have got that. One was on Jonathan Lewis, and the other one was the aforementioned one I think you brought up about in the first half. Anyhow, point being, I feel like for all of the good work Colorado did, they not only did their chances let them down, but I think even sometimes their shot selection let them down. That sometimes Lewis was in a good position, Barrios was in a good position, Bassett was in a good position, and they passed it up to do something else in another spot. So that's a thing that I think they need to look at. There's one other thing I'll say about that was a little disappointing, which was there were two kind of offensive plays I saw over and over again from the Rapids. One was the same one we've seen a lot this season, which is get the ball to Barrios and see what he does. We see a lot of that. And the other one was this get the ball wide to the right and then ping it long and diagonal or ping across to the back post. And see if Jonathan Lewis, or if Barrios has switched sides, or if Shin Yashiki has run into that spot, see if they can latch on to the ball and finish it. And that was, you know, a recurring thing, and it never really worked. And a lot of those balls were kind of either errant or they were hard for our strikers to kind of get on top of. So, you know, if you're going to try the same two things over and over again, make sure you do it well. I don't know that the Rapids did it as well as they could. What do you think, Matt?
I have a few things that I want to point out. I thought Jonathan Lewis had a really fantastic start to the game, just kind of being that you know, being that outlet and really going at goal and being direct in ways that we haven't seen him. And some of that's been the situation in terms of him being subbed in to kill off games or really chase the game. But he did a fantastic job. He and Shin Yoshiki combined for a few times. I've been really impressed with what Gomez has done the last couple of weeks. And there were a couple plays there, you know, where they played through him with relative ease. They just weren't able to finish that. So kind of highlighting the point of, you know, Seattle did a really good job reacting and recovering on plays as much as the Rapids did to dominate things in the middle of the park. But I guess the kind of theme that I have is, you know, box to box, the Rapids on the whole 90 minutes, man to man, were far better than the Seattle Sounders. And it was just in the two boxes, both attacking and defending, in which Seattle was clearly the better team. And in that, the result was deserved and the result was fair because Seattle only got a handful of opportunities. They buried the really good one that they had. They reacted really well defensively. They did a good job blocking shots. They did a good job closing down space that made it difficult to where you just said, you know, that the Rapids had a really good opportunity and then passed it up trying to look for the perfect play. And I'm not sure with the way this team is playing, and by that I mean Seattle defensively, I don't think there's a perfect play. There's no opportunity where you're going to completely undo, you know, where you're going to nutmeg Christian Roldan and then you're going to break one of the center back's ankles and then you're going to set up for a 2-on-0 and then Barrios is going to set up Diego Rubio, you know, to have a tap in, pass the ball in the net around Steve Cleveland. Seattle does not give up those plays. And so I think in that, I think the Rapids were a little bit frantic or a little bit panicked defensively, where I think Seattle accepted that chaos was going to happen and they were going to be put in bad situations, and they just counted on guys to make really, really good reactions. And so I think as the game went on, I think Lewis started to fade a little bit throughout the game. I'd say the same thing of Michael Barrios, honestly. And I guess just my main complaint about Lewis, there were about three or four times in the second half of the second half, so say like final 22-ish minutes plus stoppage time, in which Lewis got the ball in space on an outlet play from Danny Wilson or from Acosta or somebody, and he'd cut inside and immediately go for the shot. And I felt, especially as the game got a little bit later, Mark, like maybe, you know, he was reacting in a way to where I'm like, Lewis, like, are you really just looking for a goal so that you can, like, have one more highlight reel for Greg Berhalter that shows that you're going to start the Gold Cup B first team on Sunday? And then so you're feeling good about yourself from a form standpoint because you got on the score sheet. So that was a little bit disappointing for me. I thought Andre Shin Yoshiki, I'm kind of surprised, Mark, how his skill set kind of works for him being a number eight, where he's willing to track back and cover space and everything and work defensively and also be really good in transition. We've seen him do that as a winger for the Rapids, how that kind of almost worked centrally, just because the, you know, for a striker, you know, if I were to look up his FIFA stats, his defense work rate is probably very, very high. So that actually worked out for him. But kind of ironically, the one thing that I've been highlighting him, in spite of how poor he's been the last really year offensively for the Rapids, albeit playing as a winger rather than a number nine because he can't unseed Diego Rubio there, his defensive work rate. The fact that he's willing to track back into the defensive third to help out Sam Vines and then also allow Vinesy to go forward, that one thing that I've highlighted for him was the one area in which the one situation where he made a mistake that ultimately resulted in the one goal that Seattle had, to where I think maybe there was a miscommunication, maybe that was actually on Vines' fault, but, you know, if he steps that ball and just plays back to Vines and they just punt it upfield and hope that Lewis can go for it, and if they just end up giving the ball back to Seattle, that's fine. But the fact that he wasn't ready for it or wasn't reading the play or gave a poor touch, given that Alex Rodon was there allowing him to run past the two of them, you know, was disappointing given the ultimate result of the play. Well, normally when it was Shin Yoshiki and Lewis or Shin Yoshiki and Vines, either offensively or defensively double teeing another opponent, they ran roughshod on that left flank the entire first half, with the exception of that one play that ultimately resulted in the goal for Seattle. Mark, any other thing that we want to say? Shall we move on to big thing?
I mean, well, I think I said it off the top, which is we hosted the best team in MLS and we played them to a draw, and most of our fans were disappointed with that. I mean, I think that's amazing, you know? You know, if you were here listening to this podcast in our first year, which I think was 2018, if you've been reading Matt and I's writing on the Rapids in 2017 or in 2015, you know that, like, being, like, a little bit disappointed with a draw against the best team in the league is just a thing that we could have never anticipated 6 years ago. These are heady times, my friends. How about you, Matt?
Yeah, so I'll say it. I'll say the same thing a different way, Mark. You go on and you look at Sounders Twitter, or if you look at them, I was peering on to seeing what Sounders fans were saying on Reddit. The general consensus that I got from that was good draw. Whereas normally every single draw that Seattle's gotten, with the exception of, I'd say, LAFC the second or third week of the weekend of the season, in which they got a 1-1 draw at LAFC, in which you figure, given those two teams and how they've played each other, you're probably happy with that. You know, Sounders fans, they had to, you know, Seattle had to come back in their most recent game before Sunday against Vancouver, in which they were down 2-1, and then they were completely in control of the game. And then Vancouver was, you know, falling over left and right and time wasting for a draw at Lumen Field and everything. This is the first game, this is the first draw that Seattle's really had where the collective consensus from Rapids fans watching that is good draw. That was a draw that felt like a win. So, you know, any time where you have the two fan bases and the overwhelming consensus from one of them is we should have won that game, and the other fan base says we were lucky to get a draw, that's a good result, that's a good point, we're thankful it was a draw, it could have been a loss, I think shows you where the gap was or the difference was in performance between the two teams. And then the only other thing that I'll say from a big thing standpoint is Kellen Acosta, playing in the number six role, I thought did a really, really good job pressing. He was really good in terms of his outlet play. The role that he was asked to do in the number six role, which was slightly different than what we've seen from Jack Price, is very, very similar to what he tried to do, had some successes, some failures with the U.S. national team in the Nations League final against Mexico right around a month ago. And then it's also very, very similar to what Tyler Adams has brought to that position. So I don't know if there's a coincidence there, Mark, that it's, oh, Jack Price is out. Hey, Kellen, let's put you in the position that you're probably going to play in the Gold Cup. And then if you play well, that'll show Greg Berhalter that you got that skill set. You got a game in to work on that. But if that was Kellen Acosta's audition for, I should be a backup number eight, a backup number six, I should be starting at the number six position for the U.S. national team, given what I did bossing that game in the midfield without our captain against the best team in the league, that was a really, really good audition going into, you know, him catching his flight yesterday, today, maybe tomorrow, in anticipation for that first training game or training session that they'll have with Triple G at Children's Mercy Park this week for the Gold Cup. So, you know, good on Acosta, and long may that continue both at the club and country level. With that, Mark, you've got some news that we have finally about something that we've been teasing on the pod.
It's time, folks. It's the big jersey reveal, and by jersey reveal I mean the merch for this year's edition of the Holding the Highline podcast. So drum roll please, Matthew. Very good. Although we teased it a lot last week, it's official. We are dropping a piece of art, a combination of an artist friend of mine who did up a really nice portrait of the patron saint of this podcast, ladies and gentlemen, Michael Azira. And the graphic on the t-shirt is going to say, or it does say, since we've had them already printed and they're on their way to Holding the Highline Media Headquarters, a.k.a. my basement. It is the In Mike We Trust Holding the Highline t-shirt. It's a black t-shirt. It's Hanes. Comes in multiple sizes. Pricing will be discounted for Highliners, that's people who subscribe to our Substack at the paid level. There'll be a discount for that. For those of us who are, and you could still get in on this if you like, the t-shirt is absolutely free for anyone who is a quote unquote founding member. So founding memberships, are also still available for the Holding the Highline, podcast Highliner Substack. And then lastly, if you're not a Highliner and if you're not a founding member of the Highliners, you absolutely can still buy one. And in addition, when we roll out the opportunity, the sign-in sheet for ordering your shirt, there'll be an option to donate to the Azira Michael Foundation. That's Michael Azira's foundation that provides both soccer training and educational support for kids in Michael's home country of Uganda. So in addition to giving you guys the chance to spend $5 to give to Mike, and then we'll collect that money and send it off to his foundation, Matt and I are going to match and make a donation on behalf of every single t-shirt we sell. Matt and I are real straight up about this. We like the idea of merch. We like the idea of giving back to the Highliners, and we like the idea of giving back to the Azira Foundation. This shirt will be pretty much cost neutral. We're not going to make a single dime on it for the podcast. We just thought it was a cool idea. We wanted to raise some money for a good charity, and we wanted to get a few more people to sign up for the Substack. So all that in there, more information will be winging your way through both the Substack and the podcast on Twitter, and finally over email to our Highliners, the In Mike We Trust Holding the Highline t-shirt. Catch it soon at a podcast near you.
Yeah, and then also, listeners, once we have all of that links out, as Mark said, we'll be tweeting it. I'll put it in the show notes and everything. Mark and I will both be tweeting it from a personal stuff. As soon as it drops, you go to any other place that you've looked more, my stuff, Mark's stuff, or HTHL in general, it will be there. It will be obvious. Mark, I'm not sure that we're doing like a time. This isn't like a limited time only. It's until we sell out, probably.
I mean, I have hopes that I'm gonna make this limited run, and it's gonna go like hotcakes, and people are gonna be all over this, like white on rice, like gravy to potatoes, and I'll have to do another run. So I'm actually absolutely happy to keep this thing going for anyone who wants it all season long. So, but please don't leave me with a whole bunch of extra smalls. That's always the problem when you order t-shirts. You're like, oh, you know, like, we're going to wind up with, you know, everyone's going to want, you know, one size. I'm not going to anticipate it. And I'm going to wind up wearing a 2XL as a nightshirt for the next 5 years. I think that's my only concern. But other than that, we will print them as long as you buy them.
Listeners, this coming Wednesday at Dick's Sporting Goods Park in Commerce City, Colorado, the Colorado Rapids will be hosting Minnesota United, the Death Loons. This will be a 7 p.m. Mountain Time kickoff, again with a full capacity Dick's Sporting Goods Park available. We are currently 10-34 through the Colorado Rapids 2021 season. They find themselves in fourth in the Western Conference. They have 17 points off of their 10 games played with a record of 5 wins, 3 losses, and 2 ties. They have a goal differential of +4, and at the Dick this season, they have a record of 3-1-1. They are taking on 6th place Minnesota United, who now find themselves with 15 points off of 11 games played. It should be pointed out, since last these two teams met, and went to the Colorado Rapids, won by a score of 3-2 from the Scottish Salmon, Danny Wilson, that Minnesota are undefeated. They have 4 wins and 3 draws. So they have 4 wins, a record of 4 wins, 4 losses, and 3 draws. They are unbeaten in their last 7, folks. They still have a negative goal differential of -2, and away from Allianz Field in St. Paul, Minnesota, they have a record of 1-2-2. Minnesota has added a few players since last we podcast about that game, Mark. They have Ramon Avila, who is on loan from Argentina, who had just joined Minnesota United at that point, and they've since signed midfielder, but he's been playing as an attacking mid, like forward up top with Emmanuel Reynoso at times, Adrian Hunou, H-U-N-O-U. I'm not sure entirely how to pronounce that. He is French, so maybe there's an accent in there that isn't being shown on MLSsoccer.com. He is an international, and he is a designated player. And they've also added Franco Frampain has finally broken in with the first team, a left midfielder from Argentina. Mark, there was a little bit of a concern whether or not he was going to be able to start for this past weekend's game, a home match against the San Jose Earthquakes, as Frampain was implicated by one of the Chara brothers as doing racial abuse in what ended up being Minnesota United's 1-0 victory at Portland Timbers. I guess they had an investigation, couldn't find anything. In any case, Frampain has not been suspended at time of recording. He played against San Jose in that 2-2 draw. I would assume that he is available. So upgraded attacking options for Minnesota, who were limited offensively going into the last time these two teams played each other. Mark, they've rotated out things in the midfield. Dasani Dotson, who just got engaged, has been playing with Will Trapp in the middle. They were kind of Swiss cheese against the counterattack from San Jose on the weekend, so we'll see whether or not Jan Gregus, maybe an Ozzie Alonso, come in and fill in that role. Maybe an Ethan Finley to provide another option as opposed to Nico Hansen in a wide role. And Aiko Parra still is nowhere to be found in the starting lineup. DeBassi has been starting mainly for them at center back next to Michael Boxall. And then last time we podcasted about these teams, I highlighted the fact that Dane St. Clair had been on a pretty poor run of form. Tyler Miller, the former LAFC goalkeeper, has reclaimed his starting spot for there. So marks some shifted personnel all over. Better attacking front, still a team that can be had defensively. And if you watch that game, especially in the final 30 minutes, Mark, was absolute chaos against the San Jose Earthquakes. Minnesota easily could have scored four goals instead of their two. This is kind of fittingly like a Dallas team where the Rapids can bend a little bit, give opportunities. Maybe the opponent doesn't necessarily finish off their opportunities, and this team will be much easier to be had for the Rapids offensively going forward relative to the center back combination that the Seattle Sounders had. Rabbi, what do you see in this game against the Deaf Loons, who have been deaf for their opposition since last they came to DSG?
I think you did a great job of introducing the new personalities, and I think that's really an important thing to pay attention to. Adrian Hunau of France, 27 years old, in five starts, he's already produced a team-leading 2.9 expected goals, and he's converted two of those. So, which is really exciting for them. But the flip side of that is Minnesota is scoring by committee. They don't have their team leader in goals is a four-way tie between four guys who all have two goals. So they're getting it from all over the place, but they're not getting anybody to break through. And I think on top of that, star striker and, fantastic Argentinian Emmanuel Reynoso is good for just one goal and 1.7 expected goals in 760 minutes of play, which is not great. I think, bringing up Hassani Dotson's engagement was a class move, Matt. You're a classy guy. And he's been really good. Another, wonderful congratulations to, a player is Michael Boxall, who was called up for the, New Zealand national team once again. And he's been a really rock solid defender for them. He's played in, all 11 matches that they've had this season. So he's a guy to watch out for. And I think one thing that you brought up is like, maybe we see more of Jan Gregus. Maybe we see Ozzy Alonso step in. Alonso, 9 games he's played, but only 3 starts. So clearly in his senior years, he is moving. He is well into year 35. He is turning 36 at the end of this season. Clearly the Cuban is at a position in his career where they think that he is pretty useful as a defensive midfielder stopper after the 60th minute, but he's not likely to start any game. So they do have a deep team. I mean, Ethan Finley, you mentioned, Will Trapp, 1L, 2Ps in Trapp. They've got Ja'Cory Hayes, who's been playing in short little bits. Bakaye DeBassi is the Malawian center back who is also kind of a veteran player. And Juka Raitala on the right wing has been really, a solid addition to them. He's bounced around the league a little bit. He played with Columbus. I think he also played with New York. But, you know what you get with him. So this is a very talented team. It's a very confident team. These are guys who have all been playing in MLS for a while, and they know the league, and they understand its ins and its outs and its kind of timing and its pace. The one thing that I think is always at issue when it comes to going on the road with the Rapids, against the Rapids is, altitude. We haven't talked about altitude a bunch, but when you're talking about a team playing a Saturday game and then showing up the next week, and playing a Wednesday game on short rest, altitude is going to matter. Guys are going to be a little bit tired. They're going to be a little bit winded, and we'll see if that has some impact. So I think, despite the fact that the Rapids are going to be missing a lot of players, and trying to figure out what our lineup looks like is a good question, I still think we hold the advantage in terms of fit and fitness and in terms of rest because of the altitude. Matt, any thoughts off of the many things that I said, or do you have something unique to offer to the listeners?
Well, I'd say I think the main concern that you have from a rapid standpoint is going to be more what are they doing internally, given that the three players called up for the Gold Cup are officially joining the U.S. national team. I'll confirm this with Robin Fraser, but I'm 99.99% sure that Sam Vines, Kellen Acosta, and Jonathan Lewis won't be available for that. Given the injury that happened to Jack Price, Mark, I've got some serious concerns about what this Rapids midfield looks like on Wednesday night. Okay, if Jack Price is able to come in, okay. Andre Shinoshiki showed that he can do a job, albeit it's not perfect. Can he fill in? Yeah, that's okay. Is this Nicholas Mesquita time against a weakened center defensive midfielder and weakened center back combinations that we see from Minnesota United? I would assume with Jonathan Lewis unavailable and Brian Galvan, who's come off the bench in a couple games, is this finally his chance to start and show what he can do, you know, as a foil for Michael Barrios, who will be starting on the right, I think is a really, really interesting question. What the Rapids do at left back, as I'm currently finishing up my Rapids secondary transfer window preview and everything, I think is a really good question. Steven Betasher has been on the injury report the last couple of games. He was not on the injury report for Sunday's game. We have seen Jeremy Kelly has been recalled. Sebastian Anderson has started and played 90 minutes in all but one game so far for the switchbacks. Do we see Sebastian Anderson get called up and play on his off wing? Do we see Keegan Rosenberry play on his off wing? This is finally the first real question we have of what Robin Fraser thinks about his left back position, because this is the first game since he's joined the club in which neither Sam Vines nor Kellen Acosta is available. And I'm really curious to see what his answer to that is. And I'm not convinced given the options that he realistically has there, Mark. So I think that's a concern, given how key the wide positions have been for the Rapids and how key that's going to be given the opposing fullbacks that we have. And that could be where the key attacks come from if we're talking about Frampton. But I think the opponent is predictable. The opponent has some very key and obvious strengths and some very key and obvious weaknesses that play to the Rapids' advantage, playing at home, playing at altitude with the opponent probably coming out in a bit of a mid-block 4-4-2 and looking to play on the counter. We've seen the Rapids play opponents and go at them and get really good performances and results against the likes of Dallas, against Houston, to Vancouver, to a certain extent a couple weeks ago as well. So San Jose, maybe as well. I can't remember one of those other wins that was the five wins in six games. In any case, the opponent can be had. I think the game plan is going to be relatively straightforward in terms of what the Rapids are trying to do and where they're trying to do it and what they're trying to allow and not allow the opponent to do and where they're allowing them to do it. I think the key question is who's going to be doing that, Mark. And I think your guess, Rabbi, your guess, listener, is as good as mine in terms of who's playing at left back and who are the three midfielders, especially if Jack Price is unavailable. So this might be an ugly game from a performance standpoint, but if you're a playoff team, you would expect to go in and get a result in this one. And the Rapids have proven that when they don't necessarily have their full preferred best 11 in games earlier this season, when they play, they'll find ways to get results. So Diego Rubio, who wore the captain's armband on Sunday, I'm looking for him to step up in this game. I'm looking for whoever's playing at the other wing position to step up in this game, and I'm looking for the back line, especially given what the midfield shape might look like in the personnel. Danny Wilson, Austin Trusty, you know, other than that one chance off-balance shoulder header that Raul Ruiz Diaz had less than 10 minutes into the game, you kept him in the back pocket. Can you do the same thing against Hunau, against Reynoso, Keegan Rosenberry, assuming you're playing on the right and not inverted on the left back spot? Can you have Frampton in your back pocket for the whole 90 minutes? If the Rapids can do that, Mark, I think it'll be an ugly, close, low-scoring game, and I think the Rapids can win it 1-0.
I feel like I'm feeling confident, and I think the reason I'm feeling confident, Matt, is that this is the first ever installment of the Rabbi's Derby, and that's because my friend Marcus Rubenstein, who used to live in upstate New York, who's a big soccer fan, moved to Minnesota just at the beginning of this month. So we have two very active Rabbis in Major League Soccer, and their teams are going head-to-head for the first time ever. I'm going to bet either a jar of herring or a nice quality deli-style half pint of whitefish salad that our Colorado Rapids are going to beat Rabbi Marcus Rubenstein's Minnesota United by a score of, I think we're going to win this one 2-0. Not a problem. We've got this one locked up, baby. And I'm expecting, although Marcus hasn't accepted the bet yet, I'm expecting to score a jar of premium herring out of this experience.
Okay, so not necessarily death to the death loons, Mark, but maybe proverbially gutting the gefilte fish.
Yeah, that I went premium because, you know, a jar of gefilte is only going to run you $5, but a good jar of herring, Matt, that can be, you know, $12-$15 if you get the good stuff.
Ooh, and then there's a couple different dishes you could do with it. So it's multi. That's something that you can open and you can use a couple times during the week to really make it last and savor it, I would assume.
Herring, you pretty much just eat with scotch. That's pretty much what you do. You eat the pickled herring with the scotch. The question is what kind of cracker you put it on. I'm generally a Triscuit man myself, but some people are more of a Melba toast. You know, it depends how you roll.
That sounds like a really, really enjoyable thing, Mark, to have for Sunday as you're watching Kellen Acosta and Sam Vines drop dimes to Jonathan Lewis's Johnny Football gets a hat trick against the TBD opponent for the U.S. on Sunday. The U.S. game, folks, they'll be playing on Sunday night, and we don't yet know the opponent at time of recording. They're using effectively the second division, the second tier of the Nations League games midweek this game as the play-in games for the fourth seed. So I believe it's going to be, I think it's Haiti or Bermuda. I can't remember the exact matchups or anything, Mark, but Martinique is the other team along with Canada. So hopefully Jonathan Lewis will be getting a hat trick against TBD, whoever that ends up being for the U.S. national team, since he can't score a hat trick against the Deathloons. I guess on that note, Rabbi, we've already said where our predictions are. Mark, who are the three players starting in midfield on Wednesday?
Oh, so I think it's going to be I don't love it, but it's the most likely outcome. I think it's going to be Mesquita at the 10, Bassett at the 8, and then Colin Warner locking it down as the defensive midfielder. Matt, do you think is that what you're going to expect, or do you think the formation will be different, or do you think the lineup will be different?
Yeah, I think Mesquita is the most likely to start at the 10. I think Bassett would be then filling at the 8 where Shinyashiki was on Sunday. I would assume if it's not Colin Warner that it would be if Jack Price can't go, that it would be Colin Warner, and I would assume that the first guy that we have, maybe Ali Larraz comes in as the first bench option that you have as a number 8, or maybe Shinyashiki subs in to maybe change the form or change things up in the midfield a little bit late, because then you could bring on Shinyashiki to provide some fresh legs in midfield if Mesquita's having to chase around Will Trapp a little bit too much for 90 minutes, but then also move Shinyashiki up top then if they wanted to bring on Larraz to then lock it down. So then you would have relatively fresher legs pressing instead of Diego Rubio, you know, who's been the workhorse, the bell cow, at the forward position, and then have all of the Raz just buzzing around, hair on fire, pun intended, in the final 20 minutes to maybe see out the game if Rapids are trying to protect a lead to get a result. But I think your prediction right now is the best option that we have, unless, of course, the Colorado Rapids, you know, I don't know, you know, sign somebody that, because the morning of, folks, of this game will actually be the opening of the secondary transfer window. So unless Porrick Smith has a deal that's already been agreed upon, and then they make it official and the guy's in training and available, I don't see any other options that you have in midfield. Rabbi, anything else, or shall we get out of here?
It's hot and sticky in this car, man. I'm totally happy to get out of here. Our sponsors are, as always, Roughneck Scarves and Icarus FC. Roughneck Scarves are a great plan ahead to buy for fall. Guys, it is too hot right now to be wearing a really thick wool scarf. But you know what? Fall is just around the corner. Your kids are going to go back to school. And they're going to want to keep their necks warm. And what better way to do it than in the scarf of your favorite club team, your local team, the youth team, or the pro team of your choice. Roughneck Scarves, they'll make a custom scarf for you and your friends and family to keep their necks warm as we go back to school. And, of course, Icarus FC, they make the bespoke, custom-made, hand-designed kits that you really want and you really crave. Icarus FC, Roughneck Scarves, our sponsor. Matt, tell them how to reach us.
Listeners, you can follow us individually on Twitter at @soccer_rabbi and at @LWSMattPollard. Check out our content, Rapids related or otherwise, at American Soccer Analysis and lastwordonsports.com/soccer. I, of course, will be covering B of the Gold Cup, looking at the U.S. men's national team taking on Canada and the like. You can also hit us up for all of our Rapid specific content at our Substack, holdingahighline.substack.com. You can view us in web format. You can subscribe to the newsletter and have it drop into your email, and you can become a paid Highliner to get all of our stuff, all of our content every single week, not just the few articles that we put out monthly and then put everything else behind the paywall. And as Mark talked about earlier on in the show, that will get you some really nice options in terms of the merch that we have coming up, the Trust in Michael Azira t-shirt and other stuff that we have in the works. I'm still trying to make the beer glass happen, folks, because Rapids, the Holding the High Line 2020 drinking team needs to become a thing. You can also follow us on the socials at Rapids96Podcast on Twitter. Send us your questions using the hashtag AskHTHL or in long form at Rapids96Podcast@gmail.com. And if we bring further monetary value to our life, you can also find us on Patreon, patreon.com/Rapids96Podcast. And we also have a great relationship with the Denver Post, where you can get a really good deal on their digital sports coverage at denverpost.com/HTHL for the really good digital stuff that Chase Howell is tuning out on the Rapids, and obviously all of the Rocky stuff as we look ahead to the MLB All-Star Game coming to the Mile High City. That does it for us, folks. We will see you next week.
Peace.